from Psalm 25.
Randy's here.
Oh, sorry.
Hey, go for it.
No.
Got it. I'll take this one right here. Guess what? We're going to read from Psalm 25. Verses 4 through 11 and 16 through 22. Make your ways known to me, Lord. Teach me your paths. Lead me in your truth. Teach it to me, because you are the God who saves me. I put my hope in you all day long. Lord, remember your compassion and faithful love. They are forever. But don't remember the sins of my youth or my wrongdoing. Remember me only according to your faithful love, for the sake of your goodness, Lord. The Lord is good and does the right thing. He teaches sinners which way they should go. God guides the weak to justice, teaching them his way. All the Lord's paths are loving and faithful for those who keep his covenant and laws. Please, for the sake of your good name, Lord, forgive my sins, which are many. Turn to me, God, and have mercy on me, because I'm alone and suffering. My heart's troubles keep getting bigger. Set me free from my distress. Look at my suffering and trouble. Forgive all my sins. Look at how many enemies I have and how violently they hate me. Please protect my life. Deliver me. Don't let me be put to shame because I take refuge in you. Let integrity and virtue guard me because I hope in you. Please, God, save Israel from all its troubles. This is the word of the God for people of God.
Thank you, Randy. Well, good morning, everybody. Again, we have been working on a series called This Is Us, and it is basically a series on relationships, how we interconnect together. And so the week one, we talked about how the most, let me get rid of some of this stuff, how the most important relation, nope, don't go take it. Don't take it. I'm going to need it for later. How the most important relationship is our relationship with God. And from that relationship, all other relationships will actually flow. Week two, we talked about the relationship of pairs and marriages and spiritual friends. And so because we talked about the pairs and the relationship with other people in week two, we had to talk in week three about forgiveness, right? Because wherever two people or three people come together, there's going to be conflict. And so that was week three. Last week, we talked about children and healthy influences we have as parents and other adults on the lives of our children. And today, we're going to look at the other us in our world having to do with the generations of how we interact together in the church in particular. It is not easy to be a family of any kind in today's world, but many of you know more than ever, it is especially hard to be a family in the church these days. There are pressures of daily world, there are rapidly changing variables in our society, and more than any other time in the history of the church, just the sheer numbers of multiple generations under one roof make it more complicated. Some of you know the generational theory, and you may know which generation you are in. If you do know, I'm not going to call out and make anybody do this, but you might want to raise your hand if you think you're in this generation. Anybody here from the generation called the GI generation? These were our World War II people. My dad was a GI. You are probably one of the oldest and wisest people in the room. Anybody want to claim that? Yay! The next generation to follow that was the silent generation. They were born when my mom was born in kind of the middle of the Depression. Anybody here born in the middle of the Depression? Somebody, yep, we got some folks with that. Any baby boomers? That makes up a pretty large crowd. Look at you guys. Any baby busters? That was the group kind of right after that group, like born in the mid-60s, somewhere between about 63 on. Okay. And then there's Generation X and Generation, did anybody here know you're a Generation Xer? There you go, good. We have Generation Y, which is somewhere between 18 to 35 years old. Anybody in that group? Anybody a Y generation? What generation are you? You're an Xer. Okay. So how about Gen Z? That's the I generation. You'd be 13 to 20 years old. Anybody in that group in this room? Yeah, we got a few of those. And then the next generation is called the Alpha generation. They decided just to go back to the ABCs in Greek language is what they've decided to do at this point. So the Alpha generation, those are people that were born since 2005 up till their infants to about 12 years old. There you go. We got a few of those here today. So because there are seven living generations in our church, because we grow older in today's world, it makes it hard. And we've been talking a lot in our church about meeting the needs of millennials and the post-millennial ages. And that makes it really difficult because millennials are decreasingly interested in church, it seems, according to statistics. A lot of millennials will affiliate as an atheist or an agnostic, or no religious belief at all. And so there's a great concern about young people leaving the church. Y'all have heard this, right? You've read this, you've heard it. Well, see, you haven't heard it because you ain't leaving. That's so great. I'm so thrilled about that part. You are right here on the front row, and that makes me happy. You are extraordinary. You really are. So it may feel like a huge problem, but it's not the first time we've had a problem in faith like this. So read this with me. After that generation died, another generation grew up that did not know the Lord or know the mighty things the Lord had done. That's from Judges 2. So the time of the Judges was like 500 BC. We're talking a real long time ago. And evidently in that period, the knowledge and experience base of the former generations wasn't something this generation had grown up with. And then when Jesus came on the scene, he asked this question: when the Son of Man returns, will he find faith on the earth? It sounds like we're asking the same question, doesn't it? That we just aren't real sure, and even in Jesus's day, whether faith is being imparted from one generation together. So we're hearing a lot of questioning from millennials about whether we are truly imparting the faith in a language that works for them. Not just that the church has a seat for them, because we have lots of seats for them, right? But whether the church has a place for them. Very big difference. So today we're going to look at how we can make a place for the next generation. And I think Psalm 25, as old a scripture as it is, speaks to some of the major needs of the millennial and younger generations. So I'm going to focus today especially on honesty and humanity and hunger. So let's talk about honesty. Cynicism is running rampant, especially among millennials. And that may seem strange to a lot of us because we tend to think of the younger generation as being more optimistic, right? But a lot of the younger generation is cynical, it seems. And the cynicism comes from a very real place. And it has to do with how we know something is really true. That's when we become cynical. One of the reasons why we tend to be cynical in today's world is, you may or may not know, that the average American sees over 4,000 advertisements a day. Now, you may not say you read them or on television, but they are so subliminal. I was reading one person who was talking about the subliminal messages. This is how he started his day, he said. He got dressed in his Fruit of the Loom undershirt, his Big Dog shirt, his Wrangler jeans, his Nike shoes, and as he looked in his closet, right before him with an eyesight were 11 brand advertisements. He opened the pantry and he counted 214 food brand labels, all colorful, all professionally created, and all saying they are the best of all things. He gets out his box of Kellogg's to go with his Jersey-made milk, and he counts 62 product brands in the refrigerator. He opens his can of Folgers coffee to brew in his Mr. Coffee coffee maker, and he got around 487 ad exposures already that day before he even finished breakfast, much less looked at his phone, turned on the TV, checked his social media, his email, or his messages. And we wonder why we're so cynical. Again, this is a marketing digital age. And the commercials, though you might be able to fast forward, that they're actually in your show. The commercials are in the shows. And so the cynicism comes from a place where we're constantly bombarded with what we think we're hearing as messages of truth. How can you really know what's true? There's, to add to that, the whole fake news phenomenon. Now, you may think fake news just showed up last year or 2 years ago. Fake news or propaganda has been something that's been going on for a long time. It's a misinformation that gets targeted to an audience. And it really ramped up in the 2016 election because of social media, which evidently 62% of us adults get our news from. I know I get my news from social media. So we have to be careful. In today's world, there's a need for an agency called the International Fact-Checking Network, the IFCN. And last year, there was a new course taught in schools called Media Literacy. There's actually a curriculum now for young people to teach them critical reading of propaganda and how to evaluate the sources. The cynicism carries over to the church, friends. We are constantly in the church being scrutinized for what we claim to be true. And just because an institution says something is so, it could be a hoax. It could be fraud. In Psalm 25 today, there is a desire for truth. Who knows what kind of false messages David had been given? And you can almost hear the cynicism that causes him to ask this question to God. Make your ways known to me, Lord. Teach me your paths. Lead me in your truth. Teach it to me. You see, the days of the parent or the pastor or the pope just saying so are over. The days of catchphrases are not going to cut it. Lack of genuine care just isn't going to work. We have a present and a future generation which are equipped with a coping device that looks like this. It's a BS meter. That means bad stuff, right? A bad stuff meter. And they can sniff it out better than any of us in previous generations. So the good news for us today is that the primary is still, the Bible is still our primary source of truth. And the Bible's filled with honest comments, honest characters, and people who say honest things. The psalmist is brutally honest with God. Turn to me, God, have mercy, I am what? Alone and suffering. My heart's troubles keep getting bigger. Set me free from distress. Look at my suffering. Look at my trouble. Forgive my sins. Look at how many enemies I have and how violently they hate me. Please protect my life. Deliver me. Don't let me be put to shame because I take refuge in you. My sister is a therapist, and we were talking about the millennial generation, which is what our daughters are a part of, and how this is the generation that will have the highest degree of suicide that we've ever experienced. I wonder why, with the feeling of being alone and suffering. Can we make room in the church for this kind of rawness? Would it make you uncomfortable for somebody to be this raw and honest with you? Will we say that's just TMI, too much information? Sometimes I hear us on Sunday mornings, I do it and you do it. Good morning, how are you? Oh, we're good. What if somebody turned to you and said, like David says, I'm lonely, afflicted, my heart is full of sin, people hate me, and I need someone to rescue me? What if they actually said that to you? Do you want to make space for that kind of brutal honesty? Can we make that a place where the young and the old can share how heartbroken we are, how concerned and doubtful and afraid, how ostracized, how demonized we really feel? And can we also be a place that says it's okay not to have all the answers? To sit in a tense place with people where words don't have to come, but caring comes instead. Can we not only hear questions, but can we also celebrate questions? And maybe even admit to ourselves that we had the same question ourselves? I noticed the end of Psalm 25 that Randy read. The last verse, the psalmist still hasn't figured it out. It doesn't end all neat and tie the loop. It's still unresolved. And isn't this also a place we find ourselves a lot of times? Can we be a safe place for that kind of tension while God is working on us? So honesty. Humanity is the next thing I notice. We are being told by millennials that what really they want are relationships. It's why our stewardship series had words that you could use with the words one another, responsibility with each other, respecting one another, engaging one another, partnering one another, committing with one another. These are relational words. And it's not just how we relate to our church as an institution and as children here. It also is how we relate to each other. This generation's not looking for glitz or flair. They can't be wooed by entertainment the way us baby boomers were. One preacher put it this week in a sermon I was listening to. He says, even if we try, we cannot be more entertaining than their phones. You can't out-entertain a phone. It is much more interesting than you or me. What this generation really needs is a place for humanity. Last week, we did our three-legged race in each service, and I was on one of the teams of adult with a youth in each service, and we had another adult with a youth in each service. So the first service, we had I lost. The second service, there was a tie, or at least that was what we said. I think we won, but they said it was a tie. In the third service, we started the race, but the other adult on the other team with the kid, as they were racing, picked up the kid and ran to the goal line. My partner and I got so hung up halfway down the aisle that I almost fell over. And one of the best lines last week was little Nathan cheering himself on after having been picked up to the end of the line and saying, "Hey, there are no rules." What a human response, right? That is our alpha generation. One of the members told me the next day that he wanted to give me a compliment, and he said how important it is that church people are able to see their pastor who's so willing to embarrass herself. Well, I'm pretty good at that. It requires a lot of vulnerability. How vulnerable are we willing to be? How human? Listen to these very human words. Don't remember the sins of my youth or my wrongdoing. How many of you want to say, please do not remember what I did back then? Remember me only according to your faithful love. Forgive my sins. Please, God, save us from our troubles. In worship, in student meetings, in confirmation, in gatherings of all sorts, people, we just can't give them another program. People are just busy enough. They don't have time for just another program. We don't need any more programs. None of us do. What we need is each other in everyday life. We need to be connected. And that should be natural for a church that is used as an image called the body of Christ, right? That's a connectional image. So honesty and humanity. Y'all, we're still figuring this out, and I think it's okay that the church is a work in progress as individuals and as an institution. One writer who works with millennials says the real change we need is a mindset. We have got to be able to say, as a church, that what got us to here may not get us to there. Does that make sense? We cannot reduce church to membership or attendance or religious activity or even moral living. We have to make church connection, not only to each other, but especially connection to God. I want to point to that third H for today, which is the hunger in our world. We're talking about pointing to a source that will fill us because we have that grace. We have the grace. We have the story of grace, grace that saved you and grace that saved me. This is the message that we hear. We are more sinful than we'll ever dare to believe, and God is more loving than anything we could hope or dream. That's our story. That's the basic message. We are saved by grace in Jesus. This is us. So whether you're in Generation GI or Generation Alpha, we've just got to be able to learn how to share our stories. And when you share your story, don't be afraid to share some of your mistakes. Don't share all your mistakes. We don't want to hear what you all did in the 60s, all of you. Not every single thing, but maybe one or two might help us, right? A couple of weeks ago when I was preaching on marriage, I made the statement that I didn't have it all figured out because I was in my second marriage. And some people came up to me afterwards and they went, whoa, we didn't realize that. And they said that made me more approachable to them somehow. And I had been wondering at home, do I even talk about it? Should I mention that? But I think it's important for people to hear our real stories, the stories where you are not the hero, but where Jesus is. And in my divorce and my reconciliation and my marriage with Bob, I can tell you God is the hero. And you have some stories like that too. We sang about it earlier today. Oh, how he loves you. Oh, how he loves me. He gave his life. What more could he give? Oh, how he loves you and me. I'd like this to be us.